5-minute grace period you gave us has expired. And so I'm going to call the meeting to order. Our agenda is very short, firstly, so, but the content may not be. For purposes of discussing the way forward as contained in the registrar's paper before us, we won't need a quorum. So there's no stress or pressure on us to ensure that at every minute we need 13 or 14 members. We can continue discussing the registrar's paper until we feel that we've exhausted the matter. We, unusually, because it's an open meeting for a change, we have some visitors and guests. And I'm going to ask them to take up the seats on this side so that they don't seem like they're very, very far away from us. Honourable members, welcome then. It's been a while since we've last met, and I must assume that all of us had, much prior to this meeting, received the document. And the document is entitled Mapping the Way Forward for the Joint Committee on Ethics and Members' Interests, which is, that is the subject of this morning's meeting, and the intention is that we should discuss the document, make our views known, and so I invite you to feel free to do so. I suggest we start by allowing you to pose questions of clarity, if there are any. I'm going to ask Fatima to ensure that our four guests have copies of the document so that they are with us. Yes, please.
All right. But, Chairperson, before I start asking questions, I just want to check the manner in which, the logic in which we are going to discuss the paper. We're going to ask questions anywhere, any page in this document, or we start from page one, page two, or we jump any.
Follow us. Good morning, Sir President, and honorable members. Chair, I think the view of us maybe approaching this debate page by page, in as far as this document is concerned, it's well and good. But generally, I want to commend the describers, the author of this report. It's a document that is assisting us. And the honesty and the openness that has been reflected here, in as far as what our role as public representatives should be, I think, Chairperson, it's but as we debate on the issues as they reflected here, one would be maybe give some suggestions, but I appreciate the fact that there is a need for public engagement on these matters, because there is a perception that we as public representatives, we are not behaving in a manner that we're supposed to be, or else we've got extraordinary access to the resources that are available for the citizens. So it means we are eating from both sides. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Before it's just a suggestion how we're going to discuss this paper, but I'll also want to join my colleague maybe to congratulate the author of this document. It's so informative, and I think it's very key and necessary for the public maybe to know, would see all the, not all the public representatives are corrupt as described maybe by this document. I also appreciate the initiative of having a program, the program with deadlines, although there are some other deadlines that are we are through January. It's true, we are behind the document. Maybe through discussions we'll amend the dates that you are having here. And I also appreciate in the program that you will take this information down to the people so that they will understand how members of parliament are expected to behave. We've got some code of conduct, we've got some disciplinary, all the structures in place, so that they could understand the structures in place. The document also speaks of how members of the public can also report if they see some misconduct with the public public representative, even official. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I reiterate what the others have said before me, but would like to find out if there is a possibility of working with other institutions, or if there are any institutions that we can work with, such as the Public Service Commission or any other, around the issues of discrepancies and whatever wrongs that may be suspected in the public service, among public representatives, as well as any other organizations that they may help us to endeavor doing this work. And what is the role of the Auditor General in all this, in order to help us? And to what extent is this committee working closely with the provincial ethical committees? Is there any time where we can meet as ethical committees from provinces and ourselves? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I guess what we're being asked is to say, can we agree to initiate a public discourse on what the expected conduct of public representatives is supposed to be? Now, as in public representatives, as in elected representatives, I think in the main. And so I want to support, firstly, the proposal that says, let's initiate a public process, but one in which there is clarity. It's not about, look, how corrupt do you think people are or not. It's more about, look, in a country in which it's a democratic one, in which sometimes through what we do as a public representative, we erode the trust that people have on us. How do we ensure that together with them, we set out what is expected? So before we, because I like what the document says, it says, look, we are rules-based. So before we come to the rules, to have a broader framework of the expected process. So I agree that we do that. I also agree that in doing that, we must also learn and interact with other institutions. because between us and them, you may find that we are at one in terms of what we're trying to do. But we would also act only on the basis of has there been transgression of the rules, rather than whether or not is it an acceptable process. So if I have unexplained wealth, it's only if I don't declare. So I can declare everything that I have. And you may look at it and say, no, but this fellow, how does he get all of those? You can't do anything other than non-disclosure. So we need to find a way of doing this. So I agree that we link up with some of the institutions. We really don't have to name them. I think it's something that the office can be able to look at. There's the public monitor, there's the DASA, there's wherever. Just to really get a sense of what they're looking at, we can do that. The third thing is that I think, though, we also need to find a way in which we then come back to, if this is the expected ethics and behavior, what then should there be in the code? And I've often found that we tend to draft codes in the negative, as in thou shalt not, rather than to map out what is understood as acceptable, ethical behavior, and all of those, and then say transgression thereof constitutes, sanctions. And then we can work out how we deal with it. And then we can deal with issues of disclosure and all of that. So it's something that I would support. Then we can come back to the issue of, but how do we ensure enforcement on those. The last thing I want to say, though, I think there is a role for political parties, and I think we need to put a little bit more responsibility on political parties, because some of the things may have very little to do with my work here in Parliament. It may really have to do with my work in the party and all of those. And you may find that even though what I do, you may find repugnant, but I have not transgressed any of the parliamentary rules. So it's also important to find a way and link up with these issues. At an appropriate time, I don't think it's for this committee. I think it's a political process. I think the whole issue of part of the discourse has got very little to do with the work we are doing here. It has to do also with funding of political parties by private interest and the disclosure or non-disclosure thereof. Because it is some of those in which it is then assumed that because I'm with Mr. Landers, who may fund this or that work, also in return, he gets something out of that particular process, you know. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I must say I've read through the document, and I quite like the general tone that comes through this document, and I think this is a good start. There's nothing, that I don't agree with. And, of course, there are kind of space for refinements or changes or further, additions to that. And I also concur with other members that I've spoken about, looking at other institutions, possibly non-government organizations that could assist us. And I think some valuable work has already been done. And I remember towards the end of last year, some of us attended a one-day conference by the Institute for Security Studies, their corruption governance program. They gave us pamphlets like that and other publications like this, which is very useful for us to draw on. And I think we could continue to work with institutions like those. I remember Professor Carter Osmore gave the keynote address there at that meeting. But then the point I want to make is, in addition to the to the document we have that we will have to look at, and I want to add on to what Member Shilowa said, the role of political parties. I think there's sometimes a conflict for members serving on ethics committees or whatever they're called in other legislatures, a conflict between protecting the interest of the member from your own political party, which you have from your party political position a responsibility to come up for the interest and to protect your fellow members from your own party, and then on the other side, really looking at the maintaining high standards of ethical conduct at all times, which actually affect all of us as politicians. And there's sometimes a fine balance, and I think we maybe need to put that as a point on the agenda and discuss that point specifically, how we address that role, because I think we all might get into that position from time to time.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the committee.
And also thank you to the document of today. I'd like us as this committee to involve all the spheres of government. We deal with the intergovernmental relations, and also Chapter 3 of our Constitution. It will be much important if we as this committee know about what is happening in other spheres concerning this ethics and members' interest. Thank you.
Chairperson, I just wanted to come in, maybe I've forgotten to say it before. I just want to check according to the program. I just want to check whether are we going to have, there's an example of a ministerial book, of which I haven't been in possession of. I don't know what he's talking about. I just want to check whether is it possible that we can get somebody maybe from the ministers to come and present, or we get the book, or somebody can present the book to us so that we could be familiar and discuss something which we know. And also maybe to familiarize or to remind ourselves with our own rules book again, maybe before we embark to any amendments or additions to the rules. Maybe we have our own rule book, we have the ministerial book, even to other local government structures book, as members, before maybe we can take it out as per the program to other members of parliament, maybe public representatives, and down to local and even down to the communities that we want the information to escalate even to down to them. So I just want, as I propose, that maybe we include in the program that first thing we do, then we get those rules book, ministerial book, the rules, we discuss it, we read it ourselves, we understand it, then that's when we will. And also in the book there is something like a study tour. If it was within our powers, maybe we've got some budget, the study tour, to study other governance models from other countries, how they've approached their thing, I think was maybe the first one that we are supposed to do. But according to the program, I think it's the last one, maybe. But logically, we were supposed to get information and study, because we've got the material in us. The thing is, we want to modify it, we want to make it, modify it, to discuss it, having other information, or to amend it. So the key thing that I wanted to say now is to, first thing we do with the program, we amend the dates, because January is over, and also start with the rules, the rule book and the other ones themselves, and maybe we'll discuss the study tour later.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. In concurring, Chair, with the previous speakers, starting with what Honorable Shiloa has said in relation to the engagement of our political parties and getting a view as to what political parties are saying about these matters. I mean, it's a step that is very important, and that step is going to assist us as we engage the public, because in the public that we are going to engage, we'll be coming across people from various political parties, but we must know exactly as to what the mandates of our political parties are saying in this matter as we engage the public. And secondly, Chair, the issue of declaration of interest, coupling that with the ministerial handbook, those are issues that we must engage thoroughly and probably give guidance as to whether is it enough for the declaration, or else is it enough for us to understand what the ministerial handbook is saying vis-a-vis saying what is contained in this ministerial handbook and this declaration. This is our view. We must lobby each other so that the image of this institution and the role that public representative execute their function, it's beyond reproach as it's supposed to be. Then lastly, Chair, the issue of explanation of terms, because the term of corruption, nepotism, unethical, illegal, inappropriateness, they need to be thoroughly discussed, and that goes hand in glove with the issue that has been raised by the honourable member here to say we need to look at what is happening in the globe, because of the global standing of South Africa as a country that has actually developed a world-renowned constitution. So this, as a part of maybe justifying what is entailed in the constitution of the country, we must not do something which is contrary to that. Let us engage the international community. Let us learn from their experiences what is happening in Africa, what is happening in Europe around these matters. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. But even before we go on tours or a tour, we can tour the world through the research capacity that we have. Do we have researchers in this committee who can actually look at best practices in other countries that have got such committees, and or relative to this committee, what is it that they're doing, what is good about them, what is the bad, what is the good, best practice things.
Welcome. Yes, Honourable Chair, she said something which had me a little bit thinking, and at one point I thought, no, but I can't do it. But I now understand what the issue is, so I just want to be able to raise it. You see, this is this thing about, this is a joint committee. Because it's a joint committee, and the conduct is that of public representatives, which then becomes what then gets used even in provinces. Therefore, I think the point that is being made, what I was making, you know, when you think from a National Assembly point of view, you're thinking, you know, about, they can go and look for the mandate and get it from all of that. But I now understand that because it's a joint committee, but also because the rules apply to public representatives, including those in the provinces, there is therefore the need for engagement with those legislatures and or the committees. So I think it's something that we then have to take into account. Just to say that also, at least the ministerial handbook, it's very useful. But looking at it will also help us, because there are discrepancies. You see, if you are an MEC, you declare according to the guidelines to the legislature or the minister. You declare differently in terms of different guidelines to the president and or to to the Premier, including in terms of gifts, including in terms, you know, those kind of things. So I think just looking at the two documents would really be very helpful, because it is, they are not the same. I always found it easier to declare, you know, as in terms of the, before we change the housing one, it was always easier to declare to the legislature than it is in terms of the ministerial handbook. Not because it's more stringent, but it's also, it's even more highly scrutinized. So most of the debates are less about what is in the members, unless it's a real transgression. It's more about those in government as well. So I think we need to just look at the two.
Chairperson, I am late because when I arrived at the gate, I unfortunately for the first time this year or last for years haven't had my permit. And they said, no, you can't come in. And I said, look, I'm a member of parliament. I've been here for 32 years. Don't you know me? Doesn't matter whether we know you or not. So I called my secretary and she came and she identified me and they said, no, you must go through the visitors bureau. So I sat there, I phoned Mr. Kamal and the secretary, and eventually they ordered them to let me in. This is why I was late, and I was also very upset.
Thank you. I just also want to check, I'm discussing the document now. On page 4 of the document, it's proposing that we must at least choose 4 provinces for public hearings, in fact, for the awareness campaign. I just want to check, because we are, as I've observed, maybe the whole country is not familiar with the rules and the code of conduct of the ethics of members. How are we going to, the criteria, how are we going to choose those provinces? Because if we are saying 4 for the starter, how are we going to prioritize the provinces? So I'll suggest maybe we go for the 9 of them and prioritize according who's first and who's last. Because this information is so crucial that it goes down to the people they understand. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was, in a way, a light-hearted comment, but I was intrigued to listen to Mr. Van der Merwe's explanation. But it touches, it's very appropriate to this committee, because I think there's a lesson to be learned. Although it happened to officials outside and not elected representatives, what they did is they upheld the standards of their job description, and they have a mandate to only allow people in who are in possession of the appropriate permits. And that's the rule, and that's what they enforced. And I'm sorry that it caused you inconvenience, Member Van der Merwe, but that's a good thing, because sometimes you see that people apply the rules very flexibly. And if you're a well-known person or you're in a powerful position, then the rules are waived. And I think it's good that, you know, rules are applied consistently, regardless of the level of your position. I want to share with you another incident. Actually, no, not really. Tough luck. I also serve in the public in the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration, and the Minister Richard Baloyi, is a very regular attender of the committee. He kind of happily appears before the committee and is happy to be interrogated there and so on, to be held accountable. And we also talked about the levels of corruption and the perceptions of corruption in the civil service. And he expressed himself very, very strongly about that. And he then told us he was on his way to Polokwane at some time, and he was traveling a bit too fast on the highway. And a speed cop jumped out of the bushes where they were hiding, and they stopped him. And they started writing out a speeding ticket. And halfway through, they suddenly realized who this man was. They realized he was a minister in the cabinet, someone recognized him or whatever, and then the traffic officer stood back and he was became very hesitant and he wanted to say, okay, that's fine, I'll tear up the ticket, you can go, I'm sure you have very important business to do and you must have been in a hurry. He tried to give the minister explanations. And Minister Baloyi told us, he said to this guy, no, I actually was speeding. And you doing your job, and I understand that, and you have to continue doing what you're doing, and I'll accept the ticket from you. And he insisted that the traffic officer issued him with a ticket. And I'm very impressed with that story. And I said to him, that's fine. So you're leading by example. You're leading from the top. And I think that same standard should apply to all of us, right down from the highest to the lowest. And that is confirmed by Kwes van der Merwe's story.
Well, just before I recognize Mrs. Ngogo, I'm pleased that you tell this little anecdote, because perhaps having served on this committee, a lot has rubbed off on Minister Baloyi, and as a result he was able to act in the way that he did. He was a member of this committee before he was promoted. Yes. Mrs. Ngogo.
Chair,
okay.
I'm thinking from my seat. Maybe Fatima and them here, and liaising with you, we can have just less than a page flyer, which we can take to our constituencies and actually talk to what is expected of us, and what role they can play to make us accountable, in simple language. So that as we come along, people are aware what is it that we're talking about. And we'll begin to hear that, then people will begin to touch their foreheads and remember things. And maybe they also can assist us as we talk with them to strengthen the work of the community.
Precisely, if you will now allow me to make my little 2 cents worth, if I may. I'm very glad for the input you've made. It's not the end. We'll still go on discussing what's contained in the book. The registrar and I have been debating this thing for some time now. And the debate has shifted. We looked at, she's fond of talking about, we shouldn't focus so much on rules. And,
like having your ticket.
Yes. Yeah. And that we should try and stay away from the American system. Now, in America, they have federal states, and each state, they literally have buildings full of books which set out various codes of ethics. And every time someone transgressed, one of the state representatives, counselor, whoever, transgresses, someone sits down and writes a new book, or more than one. And that book goes into those buildings. And so you have literally full libraries explaining how well they are doing, when in actual fact they're not doing well. And she's often argued for, rather for a system of values. Now, it sounds very good, and I can't find fault with it, because it's something our parents try to teach us. Our parents don't put books on shelves and say, go there and read. They teach you. They teach you values. As you grow and as you progress, they keep hammering those values into you. So in the past 6 to 9 months, suddenly this whole thing has hit the public discourse. We have a new expression, tenderpreneur. And essentially, it's elected public representatives doing business with government. Now, I've been encouraged by the fact that our leaders, however we may feel about them politically, have come out very strong and have said this is unacceptable. And I'm encouraged by the fact that the Minister of Finance has said he's in favor of a lifestyles audit. I think it's excellent. I'm a little fearful of his personal safety, though. And I'm going to say this to him, but that's another matter altogether. And it is because of what has happened in the past 9 to 12 months that the registrar and I felt that, well, you know, the system of declarations that we have here in Parliament is actually the bare minimum. And so the question one of you posed, are these declarations adequate? I think the answer is very simply no. Hopelessly inadequate. If that is so, where do we go then? Bearing in mind that we don't want elected public representatives to do business with government. Okay, that's a principle. Now, I've been impressed by Mrs. Ngobo refers to best practices. Members of the committee would be interested to know that we've been visited by delegations from, amongst others, Canada, the strangest of places, Indonesia, yes, Ireland. And did Britain come? No, Ireland. And all three expressed their admiration for our system, the very system that we are saying today it's not enough. But they are saying, well, from afar, from where they are, you know, they're quite impressed, you know. And the Indonesians, we had to actually give the Indonesians a workshop. And they were saying, you need to help us. We want to introduce this in our parliament. And then I was feeling quite at odds with myself because I realized, well, I couldn't say to them, well, it's hopelessly inadequate because I would have been letting my parliament down, you see, and the presiding officers would have probably hauled me before them and said, what are you doing? But so there we are. One of the things we've picked up from the Canadian system, which I like, and I'm punting it now, I'm actually lobbying you. Their system says to the elected public representatives, when they are required to declare, all the things we ask, and then they go further. Do any of your business entities in which you have an interest, are any of them doing business with government at national level, at provincial level, at local government level, at state-owned enterprise level? And they request that you provide full details, the contract number, the details of the contract, etc., etc. Now, if you stop and think about it, that's what the Canadians require. Now, if you stop and think about it, that would exercise a brake on what is happening at present. Right? Because our system demands that everything you declare is made public. At any given moment, someone can log on to Parliament's website, punch in Shiloh's name, and they'll see exactly everything he has declared. Now we are saying, take it further. Tell the public, those business entities in which you have an interest, whether you're a shareholder, whether you're a director, whatever the case may be, which of them are doing business with government? And the details. The Canadian system then goes even further, and it says, your family members, your spouse, fourth one, seventh one, your siblings, brothers and sisters, your children. Which of them are doing business with government? Provide full details. So I've been saying to the registrar for some time now, I find this, for me, I find this very attractive. I can't see why we can't introduce it here in South Africa. It makes absolute sense. Because if we agree that our system of declaration is not effective, and if we agree with the principle that elected public representatives should not do business with government, then we should welcome and grasp that aspect of the Canadian system and introduce it in ours. Now, some of you have mooted the idea that we should engage with other organs and structures. I agree. I have said to you, Minister of Finance is undertaking certain steps, which I think we must all welcome. And perhaps as a committee, we should somehow find a way of endorsing what Minister Pravin Gordhan intends doing, and ask to engage with him and officials of the Treasury. Now, some of you have raised the Public Service Commission, very good, and the Auditor General's Office, very good. I say that because I was once asked by the ANC leadership in the Thule House to do a paper on what is called post-tenure regulation. It's like a different language to our people. And I struggled. I didn't succeed, unfortunately, in persuading them. I did something like 7 drafts and failed to persuade them. But I still believe in the principle. Post-tenure regulations say when you leave office, you must not benefit from having served in that office the minute you leave office. Aside from your pension. Okay. Let's say Gauteng. You see? Shiloa leaves office as an MP. And then immediately the people building Gauteng make him a senior director on the board. Well, no. That's working. That's working. You see? That's a classic example, hypothetically. And I failed. I really struggled to persuade the people there at Lutuli House that, look, somehow we need to find a way of introducing this. But fine. I said to Mr. Mashila this morning, oh, well, when you fail, it doesn't mean that you failed. You keep trying. That's how struggle is. But in one of those meetings, Reverend Frank Chikane was present. And he had read my document. And I was very afraid. I said to him, I don't understand. He says, no, Llewellyn, you see, you guys hold the power. Please try and ensure that when you want to legislate for us as civil servants, that the very same legislation you're applying to us applies to you as elected public representatives. For me, those few comments from him were instructive. Well, very, very pregnant. I couldn't disagree with him. How can you? And so, if we engage with the Public Service Commission, as you proposed, it must be with that in mind. Because I want to go further and say that we need to, in our engagement with Minister Pravin and Treasury, one of the things that has always concerned me is, how does the tender system actually work, logistically and practically, step by step? And is there at some point a process whereby the people considering the tenders say, Company A, Company B, Company C, let us do, what do they call it?
Due diligence.
A due diligence. And the due diligence must include, amongst other things, a requirement that they ascertain whether these three companies have, as shareholders, board directors, etc., elected public representatives. Which brings me back to the proposal that we change our system of declaration in the manner that I had earlier proposed. Because if you understand how it works, then you're able to make an input. So without being too pushy, knowing Pravin Gordhan the way I do, I think he'd welcome any suggestions or input or proposals from this committee, given the status that it holds. Honourable members, you've made some excellent proposals today. The gist of the document presented by Fazila Mohammed is to conscientize the South African public about Parliament's code of ethics and other codes of ethics. And in welcoming Mr. Mashila, who's just joined us, I thought I'd say that the intention, and perhaps we've missed it in our reading, is that at some point, once we've engaged all the role players, we have some kind of conference. It's some way down the line, all right? Some way down the line. Because all of you point out, we need to do the following things first correctly, all right? One of the dilemmas we were faced with is should we have this conference before the World Cup? And then eventually we realized, no, that would be pushing it. And because of the enormous interest, you know, the mind may be diverted. So we said, no, let's play safe and look at having it after June. August, September should be fine. Now, by that time, we must have engaged with the provinces and our counterparts in those legislatures. Some of the provinces' ethics committees work very well. Gauteng has an ethics commissioner, one person, who does the work we're doing. It works for them. I noticed one of you mentioned Professor Asmal. He's the, I'm tempted to say, the parent of the ethics committee in Parliament. He was. He's shifted now to to the idea that we should also have a commissioner. I have not engaged him on the matter, so I mention it just for purposes of this discussion. Perhaps at some point we can engage with him too. Nothing wrong with that. So I agree. We need to engage with the Public Service Commission, Auditor General's Office. The advantage of the Auditor General's Office, I know the Registrar has very strong ideas about the Auditor General's Office. The advantage of that office is its capacity, one, and two, the resources at its disposal. I had already said we must engage with Treasury and the Minister of Finance, and perhaps at some point we need to engage with CIPRO. CIPRO is a very important organ in our work. CIPRO are the state-sponsored body responsible for registering all businesses. Okay. Now, of late, I had said to the registrar, I'm a little worried about CIPRO, about its methodology, about its effectiveness, and whether they're safe, secure. Because they say they were hacked into. So that's my first concern. It should never happen. All right. Secondly, there was a case gentleman from Swaziland, traditional leader, part of the Zulu Swazi royal household, who had businesses here in South Africa. Someone somewhere cloned his registration number. How that happens is beyond me. I know for a fact that when you register a business, one of the things they look at is your business name. And if it's too close to another business, then they tell them, they don't allow it. But in this case, well, it happened. They took his name, the business name, and the number. And on that basis, they floated loans with the banks. Well, it's fraud, but the problem was he was made to pay. Well, I disagree with you. If you read the whole case, it was just simply a case of the banks putting so much pressure on him that he was almost forced to pay the money. So amongst other things, that's one of the reasons why we need to engage with Cipro and perhaps the minister responsible, which is trade and industry, and just get a sense that, look, things are okay, notwithstanding the difficulties that Cipro has faced. We had once before engagement. I'll just give you a small example. When you want to deregister, you must inform them, and it takes a while. Now, we received complaints about members that they were directors of companies, but when you looked at the register, they haven't declared them. So when we called them in, the member said, yes, I was. So we said, what do you mean you was? No, I've deregistered. Are you sure? Yes. We checked with Cipro. It's not deregistered. We said to the member, no, you haven't deregistered. Produce a letter and say, here's my letter. We called Cipro in and they said, no, we don't accept letters. No, really. You are expected to go onto their website, and in their website is a form that you must fill in, and that's the only way. Well, in our meeting with them, Mr. van der Merwe, we pointed out, look, from a legal point of view, if you went to court, you would lose as Cipro. And they disputed that. We didn't agree on that point. I said to them, look, if Mam Thembu, who lives in the deep rural areas of northern KwaZulu-Natal, starts a little business and then at some point down the line decides, well, I want to deregister, are you saying she must find her way to the nearest internet cafe at the nearest town, which is probably in Stanger, before she can deregister? Well, then they realized the practical difficulty. I said, you can't do that. I said, you need to amend this demand of yours that it must be done on your website. And that is how those, and there were three members, Fazila, three or four members, I think, that were members of parliament that were affected that way. And we had to simply dismiss the cases against them and say, no, you know, it's no fault of theirs. Well, of course, Cipro tried to argue that, well, in the regulations, the ministers agreed. We said, no, this is South Africa. You're not living in London or New York. So you need to bear those things in mind. So I think we need another engagement with Cipro, just so that members understand who they are and perhaps some of the difficulties they're facing. So honorable members, that's my little bit. We just to bring you up to date, the registrar is very sharp on these matters. She was asked to meet with the speaker on another matter, and she took the gap and introduced a document very quickly, briefly, explained what we're trying to do, because he asked her, how's things in the ethics committee, is everything okay? Well, when she had finished explaining what's in here, he was very excited, which brings me to why Mr. Mashile is late. We have both agreed that we need to engage with the presiding officers on this document, and he went off to try and arrange an appointment. And he was smartly told, no, first go to your chief whip. Oh, okay. So he's been trying to meet with the chief whip this morning, hence his absence. We decided to split tasks. I would come here, start the meeting and the discussion, and he would try and meet with the chief whip. The intention is that we meet with the presiding officers, make the presentation to them. If you don't do these things, your way forward is not smooth. Presiding officer is the presiding officer of Parliament. We need a budget for what we are planning here. And it's easy for them to say, no, you're crazy, you can't have it. At some point, we're going to have to go before the Joint Rules Committee. If the committee agrees that we make the amendments to our system of registration or declaration. And so it's with that in mind that we were taking these steps ahead of our meeting with you. That's my little bit. The discussion's not closed. We're still discussing. I'm going to ask the registrar to deal with some of the questions that were posed. For example, the ministerial handbook, the one-page flyer, and any other matter the registrar deems necessary to raise. When she's done, Mr. Shlow, I'll recognize.
Good morning, committee members. Thank you very much, Mr. Landis, for allowing me this opportunity to respond. Can I just say that I'm going to take the questions in a way so that just the when we wrote this document, it was just kind of pulling together ideas. In my mind, I clarified a lot of the things in terms of how I see the implementation. Mr. Landis, with your permission, if I can just, sometimes just elucidate on that so that it seems clearer to the members. I think correctly, the member who raised the issue of the information is absolutely correct. I've been thinking, and in fact, I've engaged the Parliamentary Research Unit about the issue of research capacity. Our committee has got no research capacity, but I thought that we should draft a proposal, a research proposal which could be sent out and ask maybe people to respond to it. My sense was that the research should really be structured around these areas, and it's correct. The one is an audit of the existing codes of conduct, in South Africa. But I don't think, the thing is that I could easily draw up that list. We don't want just a kind of drawn-out list. We want qualitative research. In other words, the extent to which these things are implemented at a provincial level, at a local level. So to look at the extent to which they implemented, I think the issue of the Auditor General is crucial. We could ask the Research Institute in that qualitative thing to look at the Auditor General's remarks and look at the main trends of problems related to ethical behavior right around the country. So to just identify to us the key trends in terms of that research. I don't know, this is a big idea, and I'm not sure if the committee, we will get money for it, but I really think it's time that Parliament, for example, look at public attitudes to elected representatives, particularly in the area of ethics. There's been no research done. Everybody, we all say, even my document, I say it's common cause. It's common cause in the newspapers and radios and whatever, but is it common cause amongst ordinary people? What are the views of people about the elected representatives? To what extent do they think that they, they can make input to the elected representatives? How are problems, et cetera, articulated? I think that document will be of value to Parliament itself. Obviously, a survey of national nature is quite an expensive thing, and we'll have to do, if the committee agrees with a proposal of that sort, it will be quite an expensive matter. And then the third piece of research really should be done around best practice around the world. I assisted the World Bank last year quite extensively with a document they did measuring codes of conduct around the world. I think actually it would be quite useful. They use a whole, I don't know how they do these things, it's a very mathematical formula which looks at you know, the extent to which there's enforcement and compliance and the gift points and whatever. It's a bit of a complex document, but I think it's quite a useful document. South Africa is quite high in terms of the extent, you know, the in terms of how effective the codes are, because they measure, you know, where the complaints are being dealt with. But the only thing we come short is we don't have proactive investigations into the thing. But that is a very difficult issue that politically needs to be addressed. I myself won't want to go there because I think, you know, politically this thing, if you have a proactive investigator, that investigator has tremendous powers to just actually, and tremendous scope for abuse as well. So I think, you know, those are some of the things you just need to look at in terms of the future. But that's just a by the way. So I think there must be three areas of research, as I said. The area about intergovernmental relations, I was thinking it is true that, you know, we're bound by the Constitution, and even though we're a joint committee through the NCOP, we can interact with provinces and at local government level to some extent. But there is the Speakers Forum, which is a forum of speakers both at, you know, at national with the provinces, and if the matter is raised there through the chairs, etc., that Speakers Forum can address the issue. And as far as I know, because I did a workshop for the provincial speakers of Limpopo, so the provincial speaker of Limpopo, and all the speakers from the municipalities there on the Code of Conduct. So there are provincial speaker forums as well. So if we can take it down to that level and ask for cooperation, you know, those are the structures that already exist. Instead of us trying to get new structures, etc., to take the message down, I think, you know, and it will be, I think, quite an interesting case in cooperative governance at the legislative sector in a sense. So I think that could be quite useful. I think a briefing to members on the codes, etc., on all the codes is a very good idea. We could ask the people who do implementation. I have a good sense of the Executive Members Ethics Act, our code. The Municipal Structures Act, I won't say that I know what it requires and what is the, it's the Systems Act, I think. That has the code of conduct for local government. So those things, I mean, it's quite easy to look at and give a briefing, but I think we could even get those people from those areas to come and just talk about some of the implementation issues, etc. So it would be quite useful for us to do that. I think that would be very useful and can be easily arranged. Then I think the issue of when do we have the discussion and kind of a conference or a discussion on the standards before we launch with a public outreach. Part of the problem, and I don't know, I think it's also a call for the committee as well as Parliament. Do you have a bit of education first and then you go for submissions, or you ask for submissions without a bit of public education? Because sometimes if you want very focused submissions, then it's better to just focus. I worked for the Constitutional Assembly where we did the public participation process very in-depth, and we found it very useful that prior to the calling for submissions, to give a bit of input on what exists and some public education flyers for members to take to their constituencies, provincial MPLs, etc., etc. We could do that. I mean, you know, so there is a pre-preparation phase, as Ms. Nwobo said, you know, and I think that would be quite good. And we should do them in all languages. So they should be simple, easy to read. They should be focused and you know, one-pager. And they should be in all languages. And I think that, because if we want a meaningful interaction, you know, it's very easy to change the rules, but actually if you don't have a clear sense of what is out there and how you need to change it, I think we won't get very far. So that can be addressed. And then, of course, look, the issue of the study tour before the reason I put it a bit later was I thought, let us get all the public input. We have an understanding of what the key issues are through the research, through the public outreach processes, through the engagement with NGOs and other government structures. I think there's a lot of work being done, but they're all piecemeal. So maybe if Parliament could use that opportunity to pull together all that information in one forum, so that they can then we can engage with those issues. I think that will be quite useful. And then from there we can take it. Then of course there's the issue of the study tour, and then of course where Mr. Landis began, the issue of what are the key issues related to the revision of the code, the changing of whatever systems we have, etc. And then I think post that we need another round of public communication where we tell people this is the code. This is now the code, this is what you can do, and this is how you hold your elected representative accountable. We kind of, myself as well in the document, I touched on the issue of the Public Service Commission and the public officials, so those who are employed by the state. And that's an, another big area. I'm not sure if this committee can go there. I think it's very big. But I think maybe we can start the basis for the public, the Committee on Public Service to actually look at that matter in a different way, and we can cooperate jointly with them. But I think also the committee has got limited capacity, the staff components and myself and Mrs. Isaacs. But of course we can get assistance. You know, we can, through the Secretary of Parliament, develop a project team who can run with the project if required. And then, of course, once there's a total agreement on the ideas, we can cost the total, the project, and then take it through. I'm sure that, I'm touching wood, that we can get money for the project. I don't think that there'll be difficulty. If you have a reasoned proposal, it's been my experience for the last 13 years, that if you have a good proposal and there's buy-in at all levels, that it's easy to get the money.
Thank you very much. Now, I was going to make a proposal.
Maybe before Mr. Shiloh, in the last comment, I want to clear it. Thanks, colleague. I just want to check, you were saying when you made a costed program on the, so that you could facilitate the project. I just want to check, the committee doesn't have its own allocation budget, yes.
Let me say that my budget in Parliament, from all the other offices in Parliament, is the smallest budget. So my office has a very small budget. But for this project, of course, we can apply for budgets. There are also, you know, discretionary funds. I don't know what it's called, but I know there is like a small amount of money which we could access. And look, there are other departments whose line function it is, like the research unit and the public education office. So we don't have to pay for that. That's part of their normal work, and it could be a priority for them. So to also not to create kind of new expenditure, but to use the existing resources to actually run with those things, I think. Yeah.
Thanks. I was going to say that by way of proposals, that I think that handled properly, explained properly what we're trying to do, could really help enhance the public image of Parliament. One that says, look, we want, as the committee, first, to meet. So part of my proposal is really to be able to meet, whether it's 3 or 4 hours, leave aside the document and share, not stories of sleaze, but share from where we all sit. What is it that, what is our image of the kind of public representative we want, values and all of that? So we do that.
Do we want them to walk out of Parliament?
Those kinds of things. You don't want them to walk out of Parliament. It doesn't look good there on television. I know. I knew he'll get the temperance. But, you know, I think we need that, because we can do that on a non-partisan basis. So it's not my party things, all of those sort of things. It's simply, what is our view of an ideal public representatives, because we can also do public education even amongst members. I think all we have done with members, I know we have sent them to Fazila, all we do is to say, look, here is a form. You want to understand how it's filled? You go and talk with them. Rather than a discussion of, look, this is what is expected of public representatives, and the code is just but one element of doing that. So I'm suggesting that we have that discussion, which will then help develop a document that we'll be using, both for discussion. I think it can be able to have areas of, this is what exists, these are some of the processes, this is what is happening in the various legislatures. Doesn't have to be very big, but then say, where are the gaps? Because I think it must be seen in that context. It's not trying to develop a new code, but to say, where are the gaps? Some of the gaps may be on enforcement, maybe on practice, maybe on, you know, best practice or other. It doesn't really matter. So we can find those. And then we look at them. And then lastly, to be able to say, but how do we ensure it's in compliance with the Constitution? So that, you see, when you say, look, this is how far we can go, my lawyer friend here and constitutional law expert says, but we may run into difficulty with the Constitution. Now, so that's very important. So you also don't want to say, therefore, we can't look at it. It's to be able to say, but if this is an issue, how do we ensure we deal with it, but not just in terms of the rules, but to ensure that it's constitutional in terms of those issues. Lastly, I want to also distinguish between the rules. And I think there is nothing wrong, even if it would be difficult in the concept. There's nothing wrong with saying our view. Our view is that it is not prudent for public representatives to be doing business with the state. So I'm saying leave aside, you know, we can debate other issues, but I think it's an important view. But I thought you were also saying, even if we can't win that they can't do it, even if we can't win that they can't do it. Yeah, no, I know, but I'm just saying, you were saying, even if we can't win, your register must be able, that's really where I'm coming from, your register must be able to say, but Mr. van der Merwe, in a section, do you sit in a company which does business with government? Yes, which ones, at what level? So I'm using that to say, that's not the words you were using, but I was saying that it presupposes that, look, if you can't get it that way, in fact, even if it is, it's still important. So I think, I'm saying I agree with you that if you can't get it, you must also include this other one. Because again, lastly, the aim, even if you don't have prohibition, the aim is to be able to say, did these people not realize that there would be conflict of interest when it arises? Because at least there would have been an opportunity to show, you know, this is so and so, it's related to Mr. Landers, and Mr. Landers is in this particular portfolio committee or government, and he can make those particular decisions. So I'm in favor of those kind of things, yeah.
Chair, this was indeed a very interesting discussion because it covers a very important issue of the image of public representatives. And we have we've discussed numerous matters, very interesting, especially for Zeva's input and yours, of course. But what I want to get at is, what do we do now? To me, it looks as if the first one is to get permission from the joint rules to embark on a code of conduct for all public representatives, whether we will be able to do that. Now, let me just pause there. How many public representatives are there? It means it's all the MPs, all the members of the provincial legislatures and the municipalities.
Yes.
There are something like 270 municipalities. They have up to 283. Thank you. They have up to 30, 40, 50 representatives. If it's 10 or 20 per municipality, you're looking at 5,000, 6,000. And then we add the legislators, and so it's 6,000 or 7,000. I feel that as the code of conduct will affect them mostly, it's almost the first place that we should start to canvass inputs. But my feeling, therefore, is that we should agree that we approach the Joint Rules Committee for permission to to draft a code of conduct for all public representatives and then call for submissions and then see how it develops. I noticed Fazila's program, but we'll have to see how it develops. But let us start with those two. Let's go to the joint rules. When do we meet? Joint rules. You see, they may only meet in June or July. I think that maybe, Llewellyn Jefferson, you must approach the speaker on that and say this is very important, and whether there's not a way, maybe the POA or he himself can give us a green light to prepare drafts, and then later it can be ratified at the Joint Rules Committee if we do that, if we do need that ratification. But we want to start going on to get input and to start drafting a code of conduct for all public representatives, including the representatives of Pofadder and wherever. But then the other point I want to raise is, are we saying that we agree that elected public representatives cannot do business with government? I'm not saying that. I'm asking you. Because if I have a company, and the company has, if I have shares in a company, and the company is buying petrol from Sasol and selling it at a profit, am I prohibited from doing that? Because then I'm dealing with an NGO. It's something that we'll have to look very deep into. And also, we're going to have to be very clever with the Canadian model of getting your wife and your children and your grandchildren, all of them, but then I just use my friend. You follow. So if you want to catch the real tortoises, it's going to be difficult because you can't cast the net that wide. But as you say, we've got to do something. I then want to summarize by saying I think we should get a green light. You personally should approach the speaker to get a green light so that we can go ahead with this. And then as far as the actual wording and calling for the input, that's the second one. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Tim. If and when you are ready, as the members of this committee, I think it would be most appropriate to discuss with our caucuses or to inform our caucuses, because the orientation courses that are done by parliamentary members are miserable. Very miserable. So maybe if we... But true, they are miserable. If addressed this maybe in our caucuses, people would have a better understanding and might even appreciate the initiative. Secondly, maybe before the end of our term in this committee and in this fourth parliament, if we could have a bigger conference in national so that we get ideas from other people, like the APEX, the Association of Public Accounts Committees, you know, and other committees, so as to get ideas from other countries around Africa in particular, and maybe beyond, subject to budget. But if that could happen before the end of our term, not necessarily tomorrow or next year, thanks.
There's going to be an overseas investigation trip. Will it include Paris and Hawaii?
Why? Why specifically?
Chairperson, I did, after the document was distributed, speak to the Secretary of the National Assembly about the procedural matter. And he was saying that there was an easier way than going to the joint rules, no aspersions on the joint rules. But to say that if the chief whips of both houses could pass a resolution in the House and the House adopts that to allow the committee, that can also be constituted as a mandate. So that may well be an easier way to go.
Okay, thank you, Chair. It's good that has been simplified. And already, Honorable Fadameza has been lobbied with the law as well. So there's a guaranteed support. Yeah, I think, Chair, one of the issues that I would want to be included in our discussion or in this document, I think Honorable Fadameza have long been here. And the issue of the rating of public representatives. And so we're rated around 14th in terms of, on top of their judges. And that goes hand in glove with how public representatives are remunerated. So you have public representatives, you have MECs that are earning far less than what their head of departments are earning. I mean, that's one issue, because on a fairly and squarely basis, we must avoid a situation whereby we promote apathy from politics, because our children would want our children to be part of this politics. So we must not relegate politics. It must be checked. I don't know. There are committees. There was a committee that was looking into this, because if you are a public representative, you must be a public representative so that you cannot look elsewhere for greener pastures. So we must be fair and square. I think that's one issue that we need to consider. Because if we say politicians must not be involved in business, they must not do business with government, but they would argue and say, we are doing this in order to complement what we are getting there in terms of how we are remunerated. So that's an issue that I wanted it to be further investigated, Chair. I think that was the issue, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think some of the latest comments that we have just heard, I think those are some of what needs to go in the process. And all what I just wanted to indicate is that, as you have already indicated to members of this committee, that I have tried to visit the chief whip of the majority party, who happened to be very hectic this morning, and but I ended up having time with him. And I actually explained the intention of the meeting as we have arranged yesterday, and outlined this particular program that we're trying to engage. And also on top of that, I think I raised the issue of absenteeism, because it was already after I've spoken to you that it seems as if you are not correcting. And you had some suggestions, and which I think we will have to look at and think whether they are appropriate or not appropriate, and communicate it to members. But in overall, he is supportive of the program. He is supportive of the program, because also I think he echoed what Honorable Shiloh was saying here, that it is a very important thing that we must do so that we actually enhance the public trust to the institution and members and public representatives, especially as we move towards local government elections, that our people must not actually stay away from the elections. They must have confidence in their public representatives. This will actually enhance that. But he actually raised the matter that we should start by making an audit of the existing codes that we have now, and probably have a report and actually report it to all the members in Parliament on what is expected from them in terms of the current codes. And then from then now we take on the gaps. But then I said, no, it's, what you are saying is part of the program. It's all part of the program. And we need to indicate to ensure that you know the whole program, and ensure that we have got the necessary funding for all the program steps. And then I think he actually said that I must make arrangements at the register for what is this documentation for his attention. And I hope that I think I made a request that the registrar try and put some numbers to the program, some sort of a budget. I think if that is readily available, then I think it should be attached. But what I have just realized as well, you know, is when Honorable Shlowa was saying is that at the beginning when we were trying to finalize this document, I thought that we had an item where after the draft code, we will subject it for legal opinion in terms of its constitutionality. And I think then when I was looking at this, I found that I could not find it. If we could stick it at the back where we have got a draft code, that when we seek comments on the new code that we have drafted, also that must go hand in hand with a legal opinion on the document. And then we also cost that particular activity if it's going to attract any financial. I think that is what I've managed to get, and I have made sure that it is clear that there are going to be serious financial implications. I've made that clear to him, and I think also we are lucky because we have got a chair of chairs in the NCOP, and then I think also have the chair of chairs in the NA that must assist us to get this to the presiding officer. And because there is part of their work that will be involved in this program over and above the projects that we are embarking on, there will be other the committee activities. And because this is going to form almost our major program as a committee. Thanks, Chair.
Give the blessing for us to proceed to meet with the presiding officers, because remember you said to me before we go there we need to do this first step.
In principle as you said that we need to first do this one part. He has actually said that we are going ahead, but you are trying to shape the way we must handle it. And then I said, no, that part that you are saying we must do and come and report, and then we will now get the further steps to undertake. It's actually part of a holistic program, which you need to see in the whole document. And then we agreed then that now is that this document is going to be forwarded to his office. And I have actually conscientized him on the time constraint as well. And then he promised me that he's going to give it priority when it gets to his office. He's going to read it himself, because I said that I'm a little bit worried about your schedule. It looks like you are too much fast and busy here, and I'm not sure whether the document will receive your serious attention. And then he said, no. I'll give it preference when it lands on my desk. Then I think if that happens today, if the documents are available, then probably next week by Wednesday, we should be able to hear from him. And then from then now we'll take the next step with the House Chairpersons and the presiding officer.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Mashile. Oh, brilliant. All right. Yeah, the whole idea is that, you know, we need to smooth our way forward so that, you know, we don't find obstacles and obstructions on the way forward. I think that was Mr. Mashile's point when he discussed this with me yesterday, you know, and afterwards I realized that he made a lot of sense. It's very easy for old players to say, well, no. And so, or they didn't know. And because they didn't know, they just say no and give you the thumbs down. So if someone says, no, 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 go and speak to someone first or do this first, that's fine, you know. So I'm very encouraged. I want to thank Mr. Mashile for his discussions with the Chief Whip of the Majority Party. I'm grateful to him for that. All right, you've given us a series of actions, and I think the registrar has made note of them. And I've known Fazila for since 1995, and extremely efficient person. So we will carry out your instructions. I hadn't planned on closing. I was going to ask your permission to do so and whether there was anything else.
Chairperson, I don't think what I'm going to tell you now is really ethics. But what is causing members of parliament a tremendous problem is on retirement, an ordinary member of parliament is entitled after some years to 4 economy class tickets a year. A minister, on the other hand, with his wife, are entitled to something like 80 business class tickets. I think that's unethical. We're trying to fight that so that members also have a better share and ministers don't get so many. I don't think we should put it on the agenda or so unless you feel it's... I just feel it's unethical. But we're working on that in the Chief Whip's Forum also, but take notice of it.
All right, Mr. Van der Merwe is proposing that ministers also be given 4 economy tickets for a year.
It's understandable because he's close to retirement.
In fact, that's why he's holding out.
Chairperson, but it's no longer a secret. I've announced the day that I will retire. This is my 33rd year in Parliament. I will retire on the day that I die.
In that way, you won't have to be given 4 economy class tickets. Honourable members, is there anything else in this document that you wish to raise now? This is not the end of it. This is just the first step we've taken, and I want to congratulate you and commend you on the discussions and express appreciation for your inputs. I think it's been most heartening. I see a forest of hands. Mr. Mashile, my whip in the NA, Mrs. Dreya. Oh, sorry, my apologies. All right, Mr. Mashile first.
No, Chair, I've just felt that let me just raise what the Chief Whip has said, and probably maybe it will also assist in the other parties that are present here. That he has actually proposed that we need to write a letter of complaint for non-attendance of this particular committee to his office, and indicating that no member of this committee, when it has to sit, would actually absent himself or herself from this city unless the leave of absence has been approved by the two chairpersons and himself as the Chief Whip. Well, that's why I was saying is that maybe this will help also with the other parties that are present, so that maybe if they adopt the same style, then would likely correct in our meetings on a Friday. Thank you.
No, there's no alternative allowed on this committee because of the sensitive nature of the information we deal with. But I thank Mr. Mashile for that. We have instant unpopularity, you and me, because...
I just want to say that you'll have to have your chief whip's permission to be absent, and I have a very good relationship with the IFP chief whip.
Chairperson, before your closing remarks, I just wanted to say I'm proposing that we sit maybe regular to recover the time that we've lost according to in an attendance, maybe for the quorum. Maybe we meet regularly now. We don't meet maybe twice a month, maybe to meet every Fridays.
Yeah, I prefer that. I don't like meeting just for the sake of meeting. Can I make a proposal with your permission, Mr. Mashile, as my co-chair, that we've all given the registrar certain actions to undertake. Allow her to process them. And then during the week next week, we'll do an assessment with her as to how far she's gone with them, and on that basis decide. I can't see us meeting next Friday. I think it'll be too soon. But decide whether we're in a position to meet the Friday after. So that we meet because it's necessary that we meet, as opposed to simply meeting because it's a Friday and now we've got this new instruction from the chief whip. But it's not our problem. It's those members who live in Limpopo are going to cry. Well, Mpumalanga, perhaps, but... yeah. All right. Yes.
We don't need to wait for another meeting to approach Parliament or the Houses for permission to embark on that program. That, I think, you have the mandate of the committee to write to the Chief Whip for consideration at the next Chief Whip Forum, which is Wednesday. And then the week after that, it need not go to them. It can just go on the order paper, or go through the presiding officers. And then in 2 or 3 weeks, we can have that green light.
No. That's what I was trying to say. I understand the approach you're making. I just don't want. I've become very sensitive about people's egos. So the presiding officers are there. They're an important role players. So let's yes. You see, that's all. It's not that. No. They can damage you. All right. Thank you very much. Our meeting's adjourned.
Yeah.